Hi guys, welcome to another episode of the Crypto Sparta podcast. We're both here in Minnesota.
It's your mom's basement edition.
It is December 19th, so it's almost the holiday season. We got the poinsettia and the wreath in the background, but it's been a bit of a downer. We took a week off for travels and whatnot, but it's been a stinker of a couple weeks, kind of.
It's been crab and...
a little last down. Time
we spoke. Yeah, it's just been down.
Some of the alts have been bleeding. I think overall, like, where are we at with Bitcoin?
Yeah, Bitcoin, so is at 46,000. The past 7 days, it kind of was at 50,000, then it dipped, but it's been very choppy this month. This has been a down month from like 60,000 down to 46,000. So it's continuing that downward trend that we talked about, 2 weeks ago. Ethereum's been holding pretty strong, just higher lows. It's been hovering around 4,000 this past week.
It's like not as like the mid 3,000s. And like, I haven't really checked the ETH Bitcoin chart, but I would suspect that it's kind of, well, I mean, Ethereum still, above four, and I feel like if you like, you get these feelings where now you're settling into these ranges where Ethereum around four and like Bitcoin around 50K are kind of like resistance levels that we're looking at. And so I would say that mentally, and then Bitcoin always leads the way. So you want Bitcoin above 50, but maybe, you know, ETH, I saw recently some people buying some ETH 7K options.
Jeez.
In January.
Yeah.
And I was like, and then people were like, somebody knows something I don't. And I was like, some people are degenerate gamblers.
People are longing, yeah. So because ETH has been so strong lately, like holding with over 4,000, the like ETH Bitcoin pair has actually like is very similar to where it was in May or March, where it was like all time highs. And we were super bullish. So now it's like holding around like 0.8. And it's
the holiday season, though. Yeah. Everybody's kind of snoozing a bit. I think that
everyone's taking profits, securing profits, tax harvesting. Our favorite forks are Ohm, Ponzi schemes, I guess, whatever you want to call it.
Those are down. That was
major sell off from time, went from 8,000, now it's like down to 3,000. You know, yeah. Ohm was like at 800 pretty steadily the past couple months, and then now it's at 300 or 350. So, you know, a lot of hard downward trends happening right now. So it's like hard to stomach. Like, you know, the fear index is still low. And everyone is optimistic for 2022, but I think like crab is.
And cyclical market, just like, yeah. You know, like end of the year tax season stuff. And two of the notes that like we like to see, though, in terms of like, you know, there's overall market trends, but then there's like
who's outperforming
and like kind of what's like moving away from the market. Like I think there was like a period a couple of months ago or a couple of weeks ago where Luna was like way outperforming, even though everything was going up, and like now things are going down. But AVAX bounced. Hey, shout out. We've been talking about AVAX under 100.
Yeah,
I hope you listened.
We say AVAX to 100 is
not
like
financial advice.
Easiest call one can make.
Yeah.
But, you know, this past, during these past 2 weeks of downward trending, two coins really stand out that have actually like gone up. And that's Luna. It's 14-day trend. It's been up 14%. Last 30 days, it's been up 80%. So Luna's been pretty strong. AVAX has also been strong. This past week was like the only mover in the top 100. So you get like, if you bought like this week on Monday, it was at its low 75 or 80. And now it's at to 110. So that's a good 40%.
Not the only mover, but because I got another one that I'm going to talk about. But one of the funny things that I saw on Twitter was, so what does Luna do besides make me money? I think I should actually read about it. And honestly, like, I feel like there's like Sol, an AVAX that I've been in, and then there's like Ethereum, but these are like, you know, like kind of tier two, the L2 or whatever you want to call them. And then there's Luna, and I just personally don't know. If anybody out there wants to hit me up and actually explain it, I know I had a friend from college, Omar, who was shilling it hard like a while back. And I saw another tweet that I wanted to mention where people were like, there's the term Solunavax. And then what they said was Solunavax is the next Fang. And so Sol, Solana, Luna, which is Terra Luna.
Yeah.
And then AVAX, which is Avalanche, is the next Fang, which is Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google. And so I thought that those tweets were kind of like, I don't know. We've used both Solana and AVAX, but Luna.
Well, if you look at the market share for like non-Ethereum, like
yeah, and there's always Binance, which is like we don't. BSC, yeah, and I mean maybe we should talk more about it sometimes because we kind of, but it's like centralized. It might be Chinese, like
PSYOPs. Hard to withdraw, like if things go south. You know, Solana
and like AVAX Binance, the we have some new clients coming on board from South America, and then we're gonna try to figure out, like as it was with the clients in Europe, where you actually can purchase and then what centralized exchanges and then how it works to transfer from the banks. And then I was like musing, I mean, we have to do some research, but I was saying like, they probably have some kind of Binance, and Brian was like, I don't know if I trust Binance. Like,
yeah, I try to stay away from Binance. I like to have the freedom to withdraw my funds if I need to cash out.
Yeah, and like
a lot of issues.
You want to like go into that because like sometimes they'll have your coins and they're like, well, you can't move your coins from your Binance account to a private wallet. It's like, why? It's like, you don't actually have the coins or like something weird. That,
the centralized exchanges, they hold like the keys basically to your coins so they can access them.
Not your keys, not your coins. That's the whole thing. Yeah. That's why you want to get decentralized.
They're the custodials of your account. They're taking on that risk basically. And so, so you don't own your keys. They can go in and, pause or like access them or use them in the background. However, in order to optimize their business. And that's just any centralized exchange, not just Binance, but Binance, like, you know, every time the Chinese government bans crypto, you know, there's a hold on Binance or like it's very difficult to withdraw. So that's definitely something to look into when you're buying off these centralized exchanges.
Yeah, but so I was just reading into it and then also looking at it. The other thing that I had seen that has been outperforming is Juul. And I've been seeing a lot of people talk about it. And it was like, I was telling Brian, it's annoying because some of these tickers, and then we'll get into the Grimm exploit as well, where like they make catchy names for like the token, but then it like doesn't really describe anything to do with the token. But you just see people, where they're like, oh, Juul's going up. And I'm like, but what is Juul? And then it
sounds like a cigarette.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But Juul is DeFi Kingdoms. And we had talked about the metaverse tokens a while back where it was like, he had made the joke about like the Twitter thing where it was like, wait, you can't just look up the top three metaverse tokens after Facebook changes to Meta and make money. And it's like, yeah. And Juul. So as I'm speaking, it went from 22% up to 24%. And I mean, I think that if you've been kind of following the markets, everything isn't back to up all-time highs. But Juul has all-time highs. No, it actually is crushing through all-time highs. Well, not crushing. It touched 12 a while back, and then now it's at 12.5. So it is at all-time highs. So it's kind of like if you had bought a while back and you're a bit underwater when everything was like going up. This is one of those where, same with AVAX, where a lot of things are like 50% off their all-time highs. But if you were in 6 months ago, you'd still be up on them. And kind of speaks to the idea of time in the market versus timing the market. It's maybe a bit hard. I had spoken to Nick, our listener, and sometimes we get a bit too technical, but in terms of, you know, we every week speak about the market flows and how like Ethereum is off all-time highs, Bitcoin is off all-time highs. So if Joule is hitting all-time highs, these are the things that are relatively outperforming in the short term. But DeFi Kingdoms is what they're saying when I just Googled it is that it's like competing with Axies on apparently every day you can do challenges to earn. So it's a play to earn metaverse token.
Yeah, it definitely sounds like a play to earn. What blockchain? On Solana or Ethereum?
Oh, I need to check. I gotta check. But I mean, that was kind of some of the things that we were talking about in the market, where it's like, what are the things that are popping off? I mean, I think crypto, the crypto.com coin, which has like had a, for me personally, has it had an interesting, super crazy marketing story.
Jumped into the top 20.
Yeah. And I mean, we were talking also about like, we were just watching a World Series of Chess and they have Algorand Coinbase, like, the amount of marketing being thrown, I find it bullish where it's like, okay, mainstream adoption is happening.
Yeah, definitely in the NBA, you're seeing Coinbase now partnering or having the logo on the bottom of the hoops, on the baskets, you know, Philadelphia 76ers, their advertisement logo on their jerseys is crypto.com. You know, Kevin Durant just announced that he's, you know, signed an ambassador deal or some kind of partnership with Coinbase. You know, we talked about the naming rights of the Staples Center. You know, the Staples Center, the where the Los Angeles Lakers play, LA Clippers play. They're renaming the Staples Center to the Crypto.com Center, and it's one of the most lucrative or most expensive advertisement deals in the history of our naming rights. And that was, I think it was like close to like 400 million, 500 million over 20 years. But it ended up being like a positive for crypto.com because the amount of, you know, people, I think they just got listed on Coinbase too, and people were buying on crypto.com. And so their coin went up the roof because people saw this news and was like, what is crypto.com? This looks bullish. And so it actually went to all-time highs and now it's the top 20 coin. And it's crypto.com is basically very similar to Coinbase. But they created, you know, instead of a going IPO route, you know, being publicly traded on the stock exchange, crypto.com, they made a coin. So that's definitely, some different, I've never personally, you know, messed around on crypto.com or have an account, but, it's definitely very bullish, especially if you watch football or do anything, those Matt Damon commercials also showing up. So, you know, there's just so much money in the space.
I didn't see those cause I was in Europe, yeah. But I mean, you can see in America now that I'm back. I mean, America just has so much more ads. But as I had told people when I was in Barcelona, I was driving to the airport and there was a Floki Inu, like
meme coin
billboard on a bus stop or like some wall. And I mean, I saw another one. We were seeing some of the Hard Rock Nick videos where he was shilling Fluffy Inu. I mean, there was another one recently. There's a lot of this is where like some of the OG crypto people are just like not that I'd include myself, at least in terms of investing, but it's like, oh man, like I miss the days when it wasn't incredibly cringe. Like Melania Trump is doing the NFTs of her NFT eyes on Soul. Yeah, on Soul too. Yeah,
and there's a funny, I mean, it's a bug, but like there's a bug where it viewed the royalty fee and the royalty fee showed as 100%.
They're like, what? Like all the money if I sell it? But
it was a bug. So I think it was,
it was showing 10%. It was showing that like 100% of the 10% goes to her instead of to some third-party exchange or something?
No, they're saying the resale, if you sold Sol, the royalties that you have to pay to the owner to resell was 100%. So you'd make no money if you resold.
Well, that was how people read it, but they read it incorrectly. Or I think, it was a bug where for a while it said
but
wrong.
It was like 10% number. But I don't know. I don't want to see Melania's Trump's eyes.
I mean, they were just dumb. It was just dumb. It's like there's a lot of just cash grabs out there. But wasn't even the main one that I was thinking of. Yeah. There was another cringe one where it was like a lot of celebrities doing really dumb NFTs. And it's just cringe.
But transitioning to NFTs, we're trying out this new segment, trying to keep up with NFTs.
Boom. Like NFTs today.
Yeah, this is where
we'll start talking about NFTs. We wanted to start off with Nike. It is the
acquisition of Artifact Studios, and they had a very popular NFT. And so, if you've seen Artifact Studios, they have their NFT project is called Clone X, but they also do really good, artwork of the Nikes, like Jordans, and like pretty good representation of their artwork and making it in the digital space. So that was a big news. And after that news, the Clone X floor just went up crazy. Like you'd seen 50 ETH buys for Clone X. And I mean, they're just basically, like anime looking characters. With different traits, they have, I'd say they're pretty kind of like Japanese, like graffiti-ish, like Murakami kind of stuff. And, streetwear inspired for sure. And so Nike acquiring, that company, and then Adidas also made moves, competing moves. But there was kind of a debate of like who did the better move to move into NFTs in the metaverse, because Nike acquired a company, straight up just bought a company, and that for their tech and that kind of stuff. And then so that's more long term thinking, building stuff under the Nike umbrella. And then Adidas, just having an NFT collection with partnering up with the Bored Ape Yacht Club and doing just like a mint for an NFT. I think it was like hoodies, sweatshirts, that kind of like metaverse.
It's like,
kind of
stuff. Yeah.
And so it was funny too. So they had a pre-sale for like Bored Ape Yacht Club, owners, and they had issues with their site, and, and the mint price was like 0.2 ETH. And they did it on the Adidas site. They made an interface connecting the blockchain. Did the minting through their site. And, like all, projects, sometimes the mint doesn't always go through. And so there was a huge, problem with the minting, and people were complaining. And it was funny, they went to Adidas tech support or customer service, which they usually get for shoe orders or, wrong shoes. And people asking for, what's wrong? My mint didn't go through, and they have no technical backup.
Can you talk to Ethereum and get my return and refund?
Or it's do you think it's a good idea to contact Ethereum customer support? And they're like, yeah, that sounds like a good idea.
Oh, yeah. And then they were talking about how that dude probably got fired, where it's kind of cruel because, if you have a failed transaction,
And that's like really bad customer service. Yeah. That guy just wants to get rid of that person to like stop talking to them.
But you try to mint and it doesn't happen, but you still sent the transaction, and then your Ethereum disappears.
Where's my NFT?
Your transaction failed. Boom, you're out like hundreds of dollars.
That's $800 basically. 0.2 ETH. And so, so it's like different games, and you see major companies going into the crypto space. And what happened last week too, you had all these major companies like Budweiser have it,
NFTs.
White Castle bought a Seaham.
White Castle, see him.
And then hilarious. Pepsi and Meta, they had this, you know, Twitter crypto exchange, like GM, good morning. Like, we are going to make it.
Put it to zero. Everything to zero.
And so it was like really cringe for, you know, the crypto community.
The worst one, like, was, that was what they said with the Ohm rebases. We touched on it a little bit with the market where, like, all these rebasings were like,
all the Ponzi forks or all the
Ohm they went down. And then there was the guy, Ty Lopez, who's like, hey, I have a Lambo and like this and that. He's like on those YouTube videos. He's just like a shiller. And then they were doing, I saw a really funny tweet where it was like, this is a shill, like a cringe turducken, where Ty Lopez, the guy who does like the YouTube ads to try to make money, was like partnering with Radio Shack to do a decentralized exchange. And then they had like NFTs. Then they partnered with Verizon. What? And it was like the cringiest, like, okay.
Radio Shack still exists.
It was like a cringe shiller. Basically like a guy who does YouTube ads being like, let me tell you how to like just pay like $8. And then it was like a dumb decentralized exchange where they were exchanging, like, the decentralized exchange is like Uniswap exchange coins and they have like large volume. But now, like, for Are You Generous, for Rug, or for Snowdog, which we had talked about, like, you can make decentralized exchanges for just like to exchange like a few assets.
Yeah.
And so it was like a really dumb exchange. And then also they were like, and also we're adding like a few NFTs. And it was like, the NFTs were so dumb and they were trying to get hype, and literally like the actual NFT purchasers are just like hated it. And like, this is getting really dumb. And
when, you know, corporation, that's what I'm kind of like bear, or like I'm kind of hesitant on the metaverse, is because like all these corporations will want their piece and they want to monetize
it. But they don't have the know-how, and it's going to be really cringe. Well,
you can hire people, or you can buy companies. You can acquire companies to one way or another.
I believe in, this is like the argument at the end of the day where it's like, is decentralization going to happen? But then at the end, are you just trading old centralized powers for new centralized powers, where it's like, oh, cool, like I don't trust Jamie Dimon anymore for all of the old school finance people, but at the end of the day there's a new class of just like, oh cool, just repackage them a bit more hip in crypto, and then you're ending up, but is the centralization even larger than before?
But I think like the heart of crypto was like to be decentralized and like not mainstream, and like having these companies invade the metaverse kind of just, you know, kills the whole thing, like makes it the whole thing cringe. So that's why I'm kind of hesitant on the metaverse, where it's like, I don't want Nike, I don't want ads to invade the metaverse. Like, they're already putting, you know, sexual assault laws in the metaverse. You can't grow people.
I saw that was the big, like, that some girl was like, someone groped me in the metaverse, and then someone responded where it was like, no, somebody responded where it was like, I got teabagged in Halo.
Yeah, so like, but are there human rights laws in the metaverse? Like, that poses the question.
Oh man, that makes me think of, if you guys have seen Raven Quest with the guy from It's Always Sunny, Ron McElhenney, where
Mythic Quest.
Where they're like, you give him a shovel to be able to edit the world. And he's like, it's a rule where eventually, like, if you let people do stuff and build things, like, they're going to make penises.
they're going to dig a dick.
Yeah,
they're going to build a dick.
But to bring it back to we'll wrap up the NFT segment, although we'll still be getting distracted and having a free-flowing conversation. But one of the things I wanted to discuss was how, in the macro sense, and also, you know, the external factors of taxes and tax season. People are talking about tax loss harvesting, NFTs. And someone had come up with the idea, and I think I might have mentioned it weeks ago, but I forget sometimes what I actually talk about on the podcast versus what I talk about personally. But someone had said, is there someone out there like Keyboard Monkey, like some whale, where we can all just sell all of our NFTs for like basically nothing?
Let's make a DAO. Let's make a collective Tex Harvesting Collective.
So they made it. They made it. They did. And what it is, I'll tell you guys. Yeah, not tax advice, not legal advice.
Yeah, this might not be
legal. No, it's legal. But what the thing is, with the idea of wash sales, the assets that you sold, that you purchased for, you can recognize the losses. And so they were talking about how with the crypto, a lot of people are doing this year, where if your coins went down, you sell them and then buy back in later and recognize the losses to reduce your taxes. Which is an interesting thing that I've been learning about also. On the flip side, you can do tax gain harvesting. So for instance, if your business lost a lot of money, but your investments made money, then you can harvest those gains, but you still basically haven't made any money at the end of the day. And so with that, with tax gains harvestings, you basically still have zero taxable income. So the thing is, it is taxlossharvest.eth. And what happens is you send your worthless NFTs to taxlossharvest.eth so you can realize your losses for the 2021 tax year. In return from taxlossharvest.eth, you will receive literally nothing. So you can send your NFTs there. You get nothing back. So you sell them for zero.
Trigger a realized loss.
You realize your losses.
Because you didn't get anything back.
Yeah.
So how do you get that NFT back? Pretty genius idea. Then?
You don't get it back, but you recognize the loss. So you
So they just like burn that NFT. So
that was the whole thing.
You don't want it anymore.
No, and then they were saying Keyboard Monkey should do it, because then what happens is that, it's like a graveyard, but what if these things eventually end up being worth it? And so, I mean, there are some like sneaky sales for stuff that you think might resurrect in the future or something.
Yeah, who knows where it's like my Shiba dog.
The Shiba dog. Yeah, he got me into the Shiba dog. Shiba dog. The Mona, the Monas.
Yeah, it could come back. You never know.
I have one. It was like a Japanese one. It was the generative masks. I was like, these look dumb, but this is like a real artist from Japan. And this is his first NFT.
And it was like randomization too. And it was like generative.
A lot of like some paint stuff. What were the other ones? IG.
Oh my god.
Well, IGG might actually be a real one. Yeah, paint.
Paint's dead, man.
Paint's dead, yeah.
I'm like down 95% on that.
You take some L's.
But that's right. If you don't take L's, then no one can be 100%.
Yeah, yeah. And so I mean, let's wrap it up for the NFT segment. But we're going to move forward. I guess we didn't cover the big congressional hearings.
Yeah, that was last week, December 9th. They invited five CEO or six CEO from the major crypto companies, CEO of Coinbase, Circle, which handles USDC, Sam Bankman-Fried from FTX, Brooks.
Brian Brooks was killer.
He's the CEO of Bitfury. They had the CEO of Paxos, and then CEO of Stellar.
The Stellar one was everybody. The memes were pretty good about that. Like, I mean, it was like the three-headed dragon where they're the two smart ones.
Yeah, and then the one silly one.
And then people were just talking about how like she was just shilling her own bags, like. Like, you go to a congressional hearings and you just, like, keep bringing yourself up.
Yeah, she didn't really add much to the conversation. She was just kind of reiterating what people had said. The main guys I thought that were pretty insightful was the Brian Brooks guy. And then,
speaks really well.
And then
really did a good SBF, defense.
They
asked him a couple questions. He answered, like, all his answers were over their head.
But it was more of the memes from SBF more than anything. And I think the guy from Circle, Jeremy Allaire, I think his name is. But because there are a lot of questions revolving stable coins and how it's backed by the US dollar. And I think it ended up, being very bullish for stable coins.
It really was. And then what people were realizing was that the government is like thinking that it's like a big opportunity, but also a threat to the dollar. And so then there were some people who are just like, oh, this is going to threaten the dollar, Hey, I just.
Oh, it's not.
Oh. So we were saying bullish on stable coins. What they had been talking about was the idea that it's kind of inevitable. I think that a lot of the people that were speaking understood that they just don't want to be not in control of the supply of dollars. So there were a lot of questions about the idea of having federally insured stablecoin issuers so that anybody issuing stablecoins is under the purview of the government rather than having Tether be kind of like...
or USDC, for example. But it ended up being, you know, revealing or like, you know, we kind of figured out, or the Congress people kind of figured out the logic where it's like, if you have stable coins that are, you know, pegged to the US dollar, doesn't that show, you know, strength for the dollar?
And then it like opened their eyes and they were just like,
yeah.
That was what Brian Brooks had said, which was like a killer one.
And then also
he was saying, you're in Turkey, you're in Venezuela, you're in Argentina, you're in Africa. You want access to dollars. You want to be able to have a bank account with dollars and hold your money in dollars. This will speed up the adoption and dollarization of the entire world.
Yeah. And the CEO of Paxos was like, you know, buying, like, people want dollars to, you know, own their money, like citizens across the world. And, you know, it's in some countries, it's really hard to obtain dollars, especially those third world countries or developing countries that, you know, have tons of inflation. So definitely like giving easy access or like, you know, being able to send money very quickly without, you know, using a money order or like using a bank that could take several days.
Yeah.
If you're on a weekend, then you have to wait until Monday.
And on that note, it was kind of interesting. There were a couple of the congressional people who were from California. poor areas,
yeah,
where they were saying, you know, my constituency is underbanked and, you know, predatory lending, you know, payday loans, just access to loans or bank accounts or like having enough branches nearby. So there were some people that were pretty supportive. And then on the flip side, we can talk about the, you know,
yeah, it was very prime or
mongoose,
very good content day for the congressional hearing. First, SBF.
Sam Bankman-Fried, untied shoelaces.
Arcane, like his shoelaces were literally like jumbled up into a knot. And there's like, you know, only like the memes were like, if you tie your shoes like this, you're a psychopath. And then there was like the meme of, you know, the hot chick like tying your shoes and then like looking up and
yeah,
what does she see?
Yeah.
And then, you know, Sam Bankman-Fried's like positioning.
He was like this.
He was in the gamer.
It was like, he's like perfect. Like he's got his hand on the mouse and then.
WAD, you know, for direction. Then he has his hand on the mouse.
Oh, yeah.
And then Larry Serznak tweeted, like, you may not like this, but this is what peak performance looks like. Everyone's like, this is my king.
There's a lot of memes about him being like, honestly, the guy just naturally is not used to not staring at charts while playing League of Legends.
So his hands are in an awkward position. Yeah. And
it wasn't awkward. It definitely was the gamer position.
Well, he came out and said this was like very subconscious. Like he did not plan to do it. He just like subconsciously did it.
But I saw the photos of him doing that and it was like, they were joking that he's like in the League of Legends. Like, all right, I'll go mid. Who's going to take the dragon? No bullshit. Yeah. Who's jungling? Let's gank. No.
I'm going to have to solo this lane.
Yeah,
so that was like one of the meme contents. And then this one boomer senator from our congressman from California.
This is before the clip, though. The idea is like, you know, we were talking about that it was pretty bullish where a lot of the people were kind of open to it. But then on the flip side, honestly, it felt almost really transparent that these guys are like in the pocket of some interests where they're like, we don't know, this could hurt the dollar, like. And then, like, I think, like, I mean, there was also, I think since we'd last spoken about the Elizabeth Warren stuff where she's like, DeFi is a threat to consumer. Meeting. Yeah, that was a different meeting, but this, but just in general, like these like politicians who are kind of out of touch. And
well, you can tell who's getting paid by the bank.
Exactly.
Because she was like, oh, DeFi is one of the most predatory, darkest parts of crypto currency.
Yeah.
And, you know, if there's no one to regulate them, you know, who are we going to regulate? Like, you're taking away jobs, like regulator jobs.
Dumb stuff. Like, just and FUD. Fear, uncertainty, doubt from the government.
But the thing is, scared. Is like the most predatory people that use crypto or DeFi are the same people that use predatory behavior in the stock market, like BlackRock or like, you know, those huge.
That was what, yeah, Folkney Love was talking about, where it's like, man, if you want to regulate us, just go back to like getting insider traded by like Citadel. Yeah,
Nancy Pelosi's mad run. That she can't do any insider trading in the crypto market. Yeah. That's why they want it to be regulated. So she can get some information or like, you know, all the senators.
No, and like the fear, uncertainty, and doubt, the FUD is just like, it's like dumb. You can kind of tell. And so we'll play the clip from the senator who is just like,
just boomer. Just
what happens if this, like, what happens if it all falls down, you know? Like,
you know, if Bitcoin gets overtaken by another coin. And
yeah.
So I'll play the clip. It's hilarious. Crypto Twitter had a fun now, time.
The number one threat to crypto currency is crypto. Bitcoin could be displaced by Ether, which could be displaced by Dodge, which could be displaced by Hamster Coin. And then there's Cobra Coin. And what could Mongoose Coin do to crypto coin?
Crypto coin.
Now, the number one threat to crypto currency is crypto.
Yeah, that was the and then it's funny, that clip didn't show it, but he was like, there is no such thing by Hamster Coin or Mongoose Coin. I just made it up, you know, like, you know, just to fool you. I gotcha, CEOs. But funny.
2 days later.
No, during afterwards.
Oh, yeah.
The crypto
Twitter, Bitlord was like, are you in on Mongoose yet?
Someone made Mongoose Coin.
M-O-N-G.
And it was up 500% that day. So thank you, Senator, or Congressman Sherman, for, you know, getting some gates.
Mongoose Coin, show me the white paper.
Yeah, so
no, that was good stuff. And I mean, overall, the idea of the congressional segment was just that, like, at the end of the day, I think that
there's kind gonna of, like, be regulation at the end of the day. It's a matter of, like, we can provide regulation that, you know, helps fuel growth and innovation, or we can go the wrong route. Or if you mess up on the regulation, you know, we end up hampering innovation, and, you know, people move away from US and, you know, go somewhere else. Because this
theme has come through from our podcast. And I was going to say also from the earlier topic about tax loss harvesting, they're talking about how people sell NFTs to friends for nothing. The friends just give them back. That's not going to fly with regulators. Like, the regulators are going to get more savvy.
But it's also like a reminder too that, you know, the world, the crypto is so global, like the world doesn't really revolve around US regulation. You know, if we mess up and, you know, provide, you know, laws that are hindering innovation or innovation, and, you know, don't allow people to, you know, build on, you know, Ethereum, they're just going to go somewhere else. They're going to go to Singapore. They're going to go to Dubai. They're going to go to, you know, Portugal. They're going to go to crypto.
I think I'm going to head to the Bahamas for.
Yeah.
I think
they're going to go to the Bahamas.
I think Sparta Group is going to be going offshore in 2022. So.
Yes. Are we looking for houses? Is that what we're doing?
I think we're looking to do a rebase Ponzi. We might do Cross Chain Capital MCC, you know, like we might do Sparta Coin Capital Cross Chain. Yeah. No, there's a lot of interesting things going on. And I mean, this topic kind of I wanted to touch on, but then let's just bookmark it and move on to some of the stuff Daniele Sesta is doing after this. But I wanted to briefly move to, since we're still on the congressional topic of, like, you know, there is a certain point to, there's a lot of like scams and a lot of like, there's not much consumer protection. And I was talking to Brian, I wanted to talk about scammers because, like, for instance, my Twitter and also in other places, I'm getting scammers being like,
Discord, please DM me. DMs, hey, are acting like a support.
I have a, oh, yeah, MetaMask. Can you send me my, and it's like every week some Bored Ape gets stolen because some idiot like doesn't understand, like,
or like gives away their seed phrase or, you know, shows the QR code in
and the other one was picture. Grim. I think it's Grimace or
no, it's Grim.
Yeah. It's just
Grim. Yeah,
but like a Grimace is the Grimace Finance or no? Or it was on Phantom. It was, I believe, a day ago, where it was some sort of a liquidity pooling for
Grim Finance.
Yeah, Grim Finance, and it was a big rug where a lot of people lost a lot of Phantom. And then what they were saying was that the developers basically created a backdoor that they exploited. They don't think it was a hack. They think it was on purpose. The Phantom network was saying that hopefully they'll blacklist it and then lock the funds so that the hacker just gives back all the coins. But there are instances of, you know, scamming, and then it's like really...
No, be careful. It's the wild, wild west. Like, that's the thing where it's like, you definitely got to be suspicious of what kind of messages you get or what they're asking. You know, don't be blindly following or give them what they want. And that's especially like, you know, it's easy to fall in that trap with, you know, trying to get verified with something like a Discord group or, you win a giveaway, NFT giveaway, and they're like, send me your wallet address, or like, you know, you want a free NFT. And so you just got to be very, you know, skeptical of what kind of message you receive. You know, ask yourself, you know, is this legit? Having a hardware wallet helps, and, you know, in doing stuff to protect yourself, your funds, because you don't want, you don't want to get hacked, or you don't want to be a rug pull.
No, and there's ways to, like, I mean, if you get leveraged, it's interesting how the U.S., I mean, some of the laws, like, end up screwing over people because, like, people missing out on, like five-figure airdrops, you know, like, oh, I would have gotten $50,000 from DYDX, but I didn't get it, which, interesting little note also, MetaMask might... do an airdrop.
I hear some whispering. There's some
whispers. There's some
whispers.
Yeah, there's some up only stuff. I mean, we could do an up only update. This could be like a little, also, brief little clip. Up only, really, it's like almost like we're trying to swim in the wake a little bit, because that's where a lot of the good interviews are being done. And then going forward, yeah, they'll have Daniele Sesta, they'll have Tetranode, they'll have Ohm Zeus.
So, but I think that will clear up a lot of, you know, speculation, and they give you a lot more knowledge too. You can learn, you know, the thing about crypto while we're in the space is like, you can learn a lot, you know, just learning new things and doing new things.
A lot of people out there doing podcasts with a lot of alpha, and like, they're telling you about what's going on and stuff. But I mean, we can like shift that towards like, yeah, from up only, where they had talked, I think that was where they talked to the MetaMask people. But with Daniele Sesta and like some of the updates, it's like interesting where Wonderland is going to go multi-chain. So rather than just being on AVAX, I mean, we assume, and then also there's been like a little bit of flirting between Andre Cronje and Daniele Sesta.
Phantom.
Yeah, that Wonderland might move to Phantom, or MIM might move to Phantom.
Well, MIM is like one of, it's very growing, highly used stablecoin. And that whole ecosystem with Abracadabra, it got mentioned in the other hearing, the Financial Services Committee. You know, because the name is so funny, it's magic internet money. You know, at first glance, people think of it as a scam, but it's a meme. And, you know, boomer senators don't get that. or don't understand it, I guess. I guess they could have interns like research it, but you know, they don't. I don't think. I think we're early. We're very early.
Yeah, and I mean, it really is going to be like the mainstream adoption is still. And it's funny, the argument of are we really early? It's like $1 trillion market cap. Like, nah. Like, I mean, when we're talking to, we were at a Christmas party yesterday over here at my place. I'm like, average persons. No, well, we're early.
There are.
I'd say, I mean.
There's a learning curve to, you know, be able to do stuff with a phone. It's basically, you know, iPhone, learning how to use an iPhone, you know, similarly, but you try to, you know, buy crypto and learn how to crypto. Yeah, that makes sense. But how to, you know, add networks, you know, trade on different networks, you know, try to figure out what is secure, you know, trying to know, you know, the understanding of, you know, the blockchain and how everything works. And so, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we can move on to maybe another recurring segment, the classic Urzdel update.
Yeah, so
Urzdel, price is in the tank, by the way.
Yeah, it's bottoms in.
$0.07. Been, oof. No, I saw somebody down like 97%, like they got over a dollar.
Well, there's a lot of fear, and I think people were expecting, you know, 40 billion through the pipes. I know that was definitely, you know, on Twitter and broadcast, and they ended up pivoting, you know, kind of changing. Kind of, you know,
I'd say, honestly, they oversold their Q4.
But they pivoted, but, you know, they're setting up their reserve funding.
Atipana is going to be one of their reserve funding starters. They got other clients.
They got the KYC.
I think they just don't realize the amount of work that actually, like, and then I think if you hold the team to task, like, actually, the executions are not on point in Q4 from what they had said to what would have been.
Well, expected. I think they pivoted a little bit of like what they realized the needs changed, or like they need to pivot slightly from what they were doing. And so I think they had to redo kind of like the whole interface and, you know, reserve funding, like UI, a lot of web development came. If you look at the lending platform, what it was in May and what it is now, it's completely different. Trying to be more user friendly and
you
more
still simplified. You still get around like 20% for USDC or USDT deposits.
Well, they make it more easier to be in liquidity pools through Uniswap. So they created a whole interface to be in these liquidity pools, and so their Tether, you know, Urzdel liquidity pool is pretty high APY. I think around the market is probably like 10%, and they do a little bit more depending on the time period of when or how many things get added in the pool. But yeah, so I'm still pretty excited about, I'm bullish about Urzdel because it's just, I think a lot of themes that are, you know, just in mainstream that come to mind remind me of Urzdel, what Urzdel is doing, like, you know, trying to handhold, you know, banks, how to onboard banks to invest in crypto. And so, you know, and being SEC compliant, KYC compliant, you know, being the FinTech or FinCEN registered company. And so,
well, and I think also, like, if you think about like boats or like fish or whatever, it's a small boat on a big ocean, you know, like the tides like really throw them around, and like in a macro sense, the small coins bleed hardest, and like, you know, people are gonna be scared of like speculative stuff, and like, yeah, the sell-offs on all the rebases, like, you know, the weakness in Ethereum and people seeking solace or like people seeking safety with Bitcoin or something. Just kind of some thoughts, and like, yeah, a lot of people saying, you know, like it's cyclical and like it's the end of the year, but if we cross our fingers and think of a Santa rally, I mean, maybe we can move to the shills.
I think people are pretty bullish on, you know, 2022 in general. And I think, you know, you see a lot of screenshots of you know, data or like, you know, orders being put in, people be going long Ethereum, people putting bids in for Ethereum. And so I think a lot of, I think the outlook for 2022 is pretty optimistic. There's a report, you know, 2021 for crypto was probably like the best because you're getting institutional, you know, buy-in, you know, institutions are starting to recognize it. It's getting more mainstream every day. And so I think the outlook is pretty bullish, even though things look pretty bleak right now. And I think,
I think everybody's just kind of like biding their time.
But the thing is like you'd say that, but then you look at the fear index. And I think it also shows too, you know, every time when ETH drops or crashes, you know, gas fees are really low and you can actually do stuff on the network. Like you're not paying $300 gas fees, you're paying like 30, 40 bucks, which is, you know, manageable. And I think, you know, when you get these dips and it's really fearful, like people are scared to use Ethereum now, or like, you know, they, you know, pull back for sure.
I think this is like a perfect lead in though. So do you want to start with the shills or should I?
Yeah, I was like debating. I was like, I have two shills. I talked to, you know, some people, fellow Ohmies, this morning that were pretty bullish on Ohm, and just the power of a DAO. You know, which is a decentralized autonomous organization. And I think Ohm right now is, you know, I think a lot of altcoins are doing work. You just got to look at them. But, you know, I really want to do Ohm, but I'm also really bullish on RSR. And so that was, I think I shilled this like back in, you know, April, June. One of the episodes, and it was like around like 7 cents. Now it's around like 3 cents. You know, kind of like a fourth of its all-time high. So it could, so if it 4x from here, it'd be all-time high like around 12 cents. And so it's, they're redoing their app. It's the most downloaded app in Venezuela, and you know, that's a inflation stricken country, and RSR is basically a reserve currency, you know, that, you know, people can use in third world countries where inflation is very high. And, you know, they're, you know, partnering with, you know, McDonald's and Burger King, where it's like if you use RSR to buy McDonald's in Venezuela, you get 10% cash back or some kind of deals with that, with Burger King and McDonald's in Venezuela. And so they're building stuff. They're about to launch their main net at the end of the year. So it's about to go live. And I think, you know,
I was like, I bought RSR when I bought Paint. And like, sometimes you're like, I don't even know what these things really are. But like,
yeah,
again, like I was on Twitter getting into RSR because I was just trying to get deep into like whatever shitcoin I could get. The first one was Phantom. And that was like the best one I ever got. Like sometimes you just trust your gut and like, if you're going for like diamond hunting, you're going through the shit, you know, you're digging through the coal pile trying to find some gems. RSR did pretty well for me. And then what I was going to say was that I saw a lot of people talking about it in Spanish. And like my Twitter is all English, but like if you see RSR
in Venezuela,
yep.
Like more than TikTok, more than, you know, Facebook or Twitter. So it's like there's a need in third world countries. Like it's crazy that this is the most downloaded app in Venezuela, where inflation is ridiculous and there's so much corruption. So you know, they're definitely RSR is something to look out for. But I'm also really bullish at Ohm.
I'm going back to the basics. And then it was like interesting because of this discussion I had yesterday with Brian, and also like another friend of a family member, kind of a boomer dude, South American guy, wants to put some money in. My shill is Ethereum, honestly. And then there's like the basic level, and then there's the deeper level. So the basic level is, look, man, it's just safe. Come on. Forget about Sailor. There is no second best. Like, at the moment, Ethereum is definitely second best.
Well, if you think about it, the market cap of BTC is pretty inflated. Like, because of all the people who lost their wallets or lost their keys or high net worth things. So those Bitcoins are lost.
There's a lot of burnt random. I saw about.
And there's a lot of hoarding going on by Michael Saylor too and by other people. So if you think about it, you know, it's number one in market cap, but it's kind of diluted because of how much Bitcoin is actually lost. But, you know, still technically active in circulation. But those will never be are sold ever again, you know, and that affects the market where, you know, stock market is basically, or crypto market, stock market is just buy, sell goods, right? So if those coins are lost forever, then, you know, there's no movement.
But the deeper level of it is the ZK rollups. I mean, I was trying to read them. It's dense.
It's all about scalability.
Scalability, that's, sharding, layer two
solutions. They're coming out with solutions to scale and trying to reduce gas prices. I know, like, you know, that's the whole deal with, you know, ETH 2.0 moving to proof of stake.
There's a lot of people's stake.
Making decisions quicker, faster, you know, scalable.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, how the nodes operate.
Yeah. And so in a safe manner, like, I mean, if I just bought, I mean, I'm looking for, like, the, you know, like, the strategy is a bit more deep in terms of, like, I want to, like, really hit it off. I'm young, I can risk it, you know, but I would sleep calm just having more ETH. Moving dollars to ETH seems pretty safe to me.
I mean, at the end of the day, you're investing crypto as a way to diversify, and you're looking for big gains, but you're also, like, in order to have big gains, you have to accept the fact that it can also go the other way. So you have to, it's like, it's all about how much
ETH really drop that much? Like, it's almost impossible.
So it's like, it's all about, like, cost benefit. You know, if you invest $1,000, let's say, in small market cap, you know, less than 100 million, like, you could lose that $1,000, but you could also, you know, 10x and have 10,000.
The idea.
So the scale is kind of, you know, tilted towards leaning, like, the high, you have a better, it's like a higher reward versus, like, a lower, like, the worst you can do is lose $1,000.
Think about the flip side where it's like, Bitcoin was always leading the way. And think about how many people still invest in Bitcoin and still made a shit ton of money. And what's to say that Ether won't do that? And I mean, the idea of big round numbers, I think, like, you know, AVAX under 100, obvious. ETH under 4K?
Yeah.
Kind of similar. Like,
right now, it's just higher lows, right? So it's like, this is the low for this quarter. And then, you know, first quarter of 2022 will probably go.
I'll say, though, it is a bit scary, and then maybe, and so this is the two shills where it's like kind of the macro competition where it's like, okay, yeah, I'm saying ETH, but, like, personally, if I'm buying anything, I'm buying AVAX instead, because it's like similar debate, but there's more upside with AVAX.
The volume is crazy, or, like, it's slowly taking over, you know, gaining market share as far as the non-ETH, you know, blockchains. And so, yeah, ETH or AVAX has been holding strong. I'm very bullish on it. Honestly, it's like one of the non-ETH blockchains that I use. I don't really play around on Solana. I haven't really touched Matic. I've added, you know, Arbitrum, but, you know, got airdropped some Arbitrum token or some tokens on Arbitrum. But AVAX is the only one where it's like I've been able to, you know, do transactions, play around with it, you know, farm, you know, stake on AVAX. So, and that to me is a sign where it's like, if this is the only blockchain I'm using, then that's a sign to me that, you know, other people can use it too. Hopefully that are maybe at the same, like, I'm not that smart of a person. So if I can, you know, use it, hopefully anyone can.
Yeah. But I think on that note, we're pretty good.
Yeah, I think that was a good episode to end on. Happy holidays. Merry Christmas, whatever holidays you celebrate. Kwanzaa, Hanukkah.
Krampus.
Yeah, whatever. Happy holidays.
Yeah.
So that was episode... that was that episode. That was an episode. We're going to let Manya, or I'll figure it out later.
Yeah.
But that was it. Thanks for listening.
Peace.